Oh, I came out of you. I guess we have to be on the same side now. Work becomes more tolerable when you're surrounded with friends. The harder you look, the harder it becomes to get one. Hey, you are another hairless ape like myself. I see you two enjoy the crayon.
Philosophers.
You know, I know what we're talking about today already because we kind of discussed it before we even start.
Yes.
Sorry to bust the illusion for y'all listening for a long time. But I had to tell you this because I had the hardest time not humming a theme song based on what you named this episode randomly.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
I thought of a completely different song.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Interesting. So what are we talking about, though? And we're going to leave those mysteries just hanging out there and not going unanswered.
Our audience could probably figure it out. Yeah, they've already read the title.
Yes.
Probably. We're talking about friends.
So who is your favorite character? It's not that kind of podcast.
Oh, just... I mean, Ross.
Really?
Yeah, he's me.
Oh. I mean,
if you think about it...
Oh my god, that's great. I love that. Okay. Worldview shattered. Hold on. Coming back to reality.
Reconstructing.
Hold on. Recompiling. Reindexing. Okay, we're ready to go. Friends.
Yep.
The relationship between people that we call friend or friendship. It's an interesting thing. I think this is an experience that practically every human being can relate to.
I would hope so.
Yeah. Even if you don't consider having any friends, you probably did at one point, you know. And it's talked about a lot in pretty much everything because it's such a universal basic, like, it's kind of the second default human relationship, or the third of the default human relationships. You have family, friends, and everyone else, for the most part. Mm-hmm. Like, your strangers. Like, and I guess it depends on your culture. I'm sure some cultures have an attitude where what it means to be a friend to somebody is, the bar is, oh, I know your name. Like, mm-hmm. I know your name, so we're friends, as opposed to your nameless face in the background, mm-hmm. you know, of my life. Whereas other cultures, I'm sure, have a much more rigid social structure that may even prevent you from being friends with somebody for some reason, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Like we were talking about the, how Americans these days don't even know what class struggle really means. because I was entertained by some piece of media that has like the old British connotation of class.
Right.
Meaning that...
Slash the current British connotation of class.
You know, that's not wrong.
It's not entirely dead.
No, it isn't. Yeah. Yeah. Where it's like, oh, you were born into a certain family. You were just better than other people.
Mm-hmm.
Period.
Yeah, we decided...
We decided. And people are just, like, okay with that, apparently. Like, that's not what we're talking about today.
No.
But yeah, friendship. So what are your thoughts about friendship? Or friends?
So, I think friends are an important part of anyone's life. It is important to have... Well, I mean, okay, it's the same reason that we valued... any human relationship, really. I guess you can have the same sort of relationship as you could with a friend with a family member, right?
Sure. I would not say they're mutually exclusive.
Right. I guess at least my usage of the word, yeah, you could call a family member a friend, but that would be weird to me.
It seems like a downgrade almost.
Yes. Yeah, because we assume that family is supposed to be closer, even though a lot of the times that's not the case.
True.
But then that's also why people corrupt the word family and say, you know, you're more than friend, you're family too, right?
Mm-hmm.
They'll corrupt that even though you're literally not family, but I like you better than my real family, so I'm going to call you that.
Which, you know, actually that reminds me of an interesting phrase that gets misappropriated a lot about this. So I'm sure you've heard the phrase or the saying, blood is thicker than water.
Yes.
Do you know what the real like origin phrase used to be? Because it was longer.
No.
The blood of the covenant is thicker than the water of the womb. So it actually meant...
It actually is the reverse of that. Interesting.
Yeah. Your friends are so much more... Or the people you form a pact with, like you choose to form pacts with.
Right. Well, and that makes sense, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, because I chose to ally with you instead of just happenstance, right?
Yeah.
That, oh, I came out of you. I guess we have to be on the same side now, right? Yeah. Okay, interesting. So, yeah, I think it's important to have relationships. I mean, I think everyone knows this intuitively. We are social creatures. It is... I mean, do we want to just talk about the things that friends do? Like,
well, that's an interesting thing because I think it depends both on culture and time and place. Because
that's true.
I think, but the one thing you can definitely say that friends do is they voluntarily spend time together.
Right.
If you were in a relationship with somebody in which you just where you're compelled to spend time with them, but you wouldn't have chose to otherwise, it would be like, well, that person's probably not your friend.
Mm-hmm.
For example, your boss.
Right.
If your boss called you on a Saturday and says, hey, or would you ever call your boss and say, you want to come hang out on a Saturday?
No, I would not do that.
No, because you're probably not friends with your boss.
Right.
Right. But for someone to be your friend, I think in order for you to be willing to just reach out and like make an arrangement to see somebody, and there's no ulterior motive. I think that's the other thing. Like, that person's probably your friend. You enjoy each other's company.
Yes.
And I think the shape of that company can change, not just for each person, but also for each friendship. Like, I think there are people who, like, I think you have friends that are for certain things, perhaps, like, for example, I have friends that I mostly just play games with. We have a common interest, comma, and I like being around you.
Mm-hmm.
Or I like being around you, comma, when we are doing this.
Yeah, I was going to say, yeah, when I think of like gaming friends, it's yeah. I like being around you when we're playing games, right? I enjoy, you are a fun person to play games with, but you're not necessarily the kind of person that I would have wanted to like sit and talk to for hours or whatever, which is a different kind of friend.
Right. And I feel like but they all kind of get the label of friend, which is interesting. I feel like some people are really picky about the usage of that word.
Maybe.
Like, for example, I distinctly remember as a child, my dad would ask me, you know, like I would have to do like a group project with another kid that I did not particularly like. And he'd be like, so are you and your friend working on that? Because he came over to my house to work on it. And I'd be like, no, he's not my friend. We're just working on a project together, which is a group project. And he was like, but he's your friend. Because then my dad said, it's like, well, why would you ever spend time together?
Because we're working on a project.
I was like, he's more like a coworker, but I wasn't old enough to understand that concept.
Right, exactly. Yeah, because that's the other thing. Yeah, yeah. I spend time around people who are not my friend all the time because we're doing a job.
Now, that being said, work friends is also a thing.
Yes.
Which is a very interesting relationship.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, I want to dovetail. Can we drill down on this for a minute? Work friends. I've often heard people say that work is a great place to find friends as an adult.
I think we're going to later get onto why it's difficult to make friends as an adult.
Sure. I don't necessarily always agree with that.
I think it's one of the only places to make friends as an adult, but it's not a particularly good one. Yeah.
Right. Because you also don't get to pick who you work with.
Exactly. Well, and at least the stakes are not as high as like people who find romantic partners at work, which is just extremely risky.
Oh man.
And I just decided a long time ago that I'm never going to try that. The risk is too high.
It's too high. Even before like untangling what is considered professional or not and where the boundaries of the workplace are.
Yeah, without consideration for any of that, it's just like relationships usually end up going sour, but now you have to work with this person.
Yeah, guess what? You still get to see them every day, five days a week.
Right. So then it's like, okay, cool. I had a nasty breakup and I want to quit my job now. Like,
well, that's what I was going to say about one of the other reasons why it's sometimes not a great idea to make friends with, you know, your coworkers, because it's like, well, first of all, the dynamic of you being coworkers is not guaranteed, not just for a one of you might be fired way, but also promotions get weird.
Yes. Right. Yes. Yeah. Especially if we work in like, if we're actually on the same team already, right?
Yeah.
We're already very close in our scope of work where, yeah, if I get a promotion, cool. Now I'm your boss. And that, like,
yeah.
Yeah. Being friends with your boss is not a great thing, and vice versa.
Yeah, if you're friends with your boss, I mean, you may have a unique situation, but you're probably weird.
Right.
I'm sorry, but like, that's not.
Or your boss is not being a very good boss.
That's true. Or,
okay. One of the good pieces of advice that I have been given, when it comes to, like. Well, you could say like business partnerships, really, but it applies to any type of work dynamic like this. Never hire somebody that you cannot fire.
Yeah.
And being friends with your coworkers and then getting promoted is like being forced into that position where it's like, okay, I didn't literally hire you, but now I'm your boss. So it's kind of like I did, but I can't fire you because if I do, I will lose a friend.
Right. And like, I've also heard it said that one of the things that companies will also try to do sometimes, companies will try to foster friendships amongst coworkers to retain employees that otherwise would quit.
Mm-hmm.
Because work becomes more tolerable when you're surrounded with friends.
Yeah.
And that's true. And I think that's I think that's an interesting thing too, that I find that people will do sometimes is your circumstances will dictate what the barrier to entry for friendship is sometimes. Mm-hmm. And I do think it's a little gross when, like, bosses and managers, HR departments try to foster, like, I personally hate the phrase company culture.
Oh, God. Oh.
I absolutely hate it. It's like, why do we need a culture? Why can't we just go to work?
Right. Yeah. The culture should be, let's get our job done and make lots of money. Like, because that's what we're here to do. Like,
well, and that's at least honest, because that's what the owner wants you to do. He does not run this company so that y'all can have a job. Like, I agree that having,
and especially he doesn't run the company so that you can have friends.
Exactly. You know, like I agree that it's like, yes, having supporting business owners is a good idea, or at least not hindering them. That's more the position I take when it comes to like the political discussion around the economy. It's like I don't agree that we should support them, but I definitely disagree with hindering the founding of a business because people having jobs is important and people who employ people are important. And that serves a valuable function to the economy.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, people don't have jobs to get paid in the first place.
Right.
But that being said, you know, it's like, if you're going so far to say like, well, yeah, we need people to start companies to have, they're still doing it to make money, like at the end of the day, and there's nothing wrong with that. So having that attitude of like, why are we here? To make you money. How much are we making? As much as we can. Like, that should be the motto of the company. And you can do that by offering great customer service and being a great place to work. But I feel like the tipping point of where the workplace, there's a point where the workplace becomes too fun to be productive. And you will long since pass the point of peak efficiency, you know, by the time you get to, I like working here. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So I do not understand why we try so hard to do that, as if, you know, finding employees was difficult.
Right.
Like,
people need money.
Like, how? Yeah. I'm sorry. The relationship is job. We call people who are unemployed job seekers. There is no such thing as employee seekers. That's not a thing, really. Most companies, if they want to hire people, just post an ad and let other people come to them.
Well, yeah. Because, I mean, yeah, that's the whole offer. It's like, I have a company. This company brings in money. I will give some of that money to you
if you do
a job for me. Yeah.
And there are more people who are unemployed at any given time than there are jobs available. And that's been true of almost always. Mm-hmm. Like, you have to be of a very particular skill set and of a very particular notoriety for that skill set for people to just come looking for you. That is not a normal thing. So anyway, I do think it's kind of gross when employers are like, let's make this a place where people can find friendships. And so that way they'll stick around if we turn up the heat and make it worse.
No.
Yeah. You shouldn't actively try to do that. That's gross. But I guess we should get to the core of the issue, because this is something we've been dancing around that kind of got us onto the subject in the first place. Most people make their first friend, or most people's first friend is decided for them. And when I say your first friend, I mean your first friend you actually remember.
Mm-hmm.
Not you were two and you had a play date with your mom's friend's kid.
Mm-hmm.
I mean the one that like you made that your parents, you had to introduce to your parents.
Mm-hmm.
That friend was usually, if you're an American, and I'm sure this is the same in a lot of other places in the West, it was picked for you by your education system,
mm-hmm.
probably. Like, you just got sat next to another child, and, you know, presto.
Wow, we have so much in common. We're sitting in the same room together.
Yeah, because you've not been alive long enough to form any other reasonable opinion about yourself or anything else.
Or anything, yeah.
So it's so easy, and you're just, boom, friend. And that friendship will last as long as you share a class together. Then
yeah, and maybe longer.
But if you don't, like, I don't know. I remember my longest childhood friend I made in the third grade, and the reason we stayed friends is because we had the same teacher, at least one of the same teachers, all the way through the rest of our education.
Mm.
And some of it was just happenstance that we just happened to get lopped into the same classrooms. And other times we actually had more classes to take. You know, by that point you formed a good enough foundation of a friendship that it's like, well, I'm just going to choose to be around you now. And then we were, but like, I had friends in first grade that I became friends with again later, mm-hmm. because we got put in a different class.
I've had a similar experience to that. Yeah.
Yeah. It's very weird. It's like, oh yeah, I remember you, we were friends in kindergarten, but then we didn't have first, second or third grade together. So you just ceased to exist from my 6-year-old brain because I'm still new to object permanence, you know, like,
my experience was, kind of like that, but also kind of the opposite of that. It was, hey, remember we used to hate each other's guts? but now we see each other in a completely different context. And it's fine. And then we became good friends even after high school.
Right. Yeah. That happens too.
Yeah.
And I think the whole reason we even wanted to do this episode was, why is it, like, it kind of started with, why is it that your friend can just be picked for you when you're 5, but when you're 25 or 35, it's just seemingly...
It is special to make a friend,
yes,
as an adult.
It's a big deal, and it's rare when it happens. Yeah.
I think you hinted at it already. You have opinions now.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's a big part of it. I think the other thing is that, yeah, you're not forced into a situation in which you're just meeting new people all the time, usually. Or, like, if you are, like, okay, I can think of jobs in which you are forced into meeting people all the time. If you are a salesman, right, you're going to be meeting people all the time. But these are people that, for similar reasons as you shouldn't be making friends with your coworkers all the time, you can't be making friends with these people. You can't make friends with the clients.
Yeah, they're suckers.
Right. And also, you're a salesman, so you don't really have any real friends because you're a psychopath. But
yeah, I was like, you're also not human, but like, what?
That aside, yeah, there's not very many contexts for you to meet people where it's appropriate to make friends. And then when you do meet people who, in contexts where you could make friends, you have opinions. And so you're already judging this person based on your opinions. And even if you're not casting, like, strong negative judgments at that person in particular, you may disagree about things that are relevant to your lives, right? Once you actually mm-hmm. get talking to each other, you're like, oh, I actually hate everything this person stands for.
Yep.
Well, and or they're just, you know, they're irritating in some way, right?
That is true. People get crotchetier as they get older. Mm-hmm. It's like, I think the meme of the old guy yelling at children to get off his lawn is funny.
Yes.
Because it's true.
Yeah. Like, I will be that guy.
I will be that guy.
I'm already kind of feeling like it.
Yeah, I feel like as you get your tolerance for things as you get older just decreases. I don't know necessarily why that is. Part of it might just be how you perceive your time.
It's possible.
Like when you're 5, every year, like the 6th year of your life represents roughly 20% of what you've experienced, everything you've experienced so far. So it's a long time,
right,
relative to everything else. But by the time you're 20, another year is just 5%.
That's only 5%. Yeah.
Yeah. And then imagine, you know, by the time if you're 100 years old, it's time's flying at that point where it's years are just nothing to you anymore. And so, but also your concept of understanding of time and mortality hits a bit different when you're not 5, you know?
Yes.
I think it peaks, your peak, I'm going to live forever, is around your teen years. Because you're any younger than that, you don't really have a great grasp of the concept of mortality, but you also don't have a great grasp of the fact that life is even a thing. It just, everything just kind of is. But by the time you get jaded and start hating your parents, you start grasping onto autonomy. So now your life is important to you now because it's yours, not someone else's that was given to you. And that's why I think entitlement is another thing that's often thrown at the feet of teenagers, is because all of a sudden they deserve, because it's their life, it's not anything else. But they also have never earned much for themselves anyway, a lot of the time. So they've been given everything that they have, but now they have accepted that it's theirs. So it only logically follows that more things are mine, right? Mm-hmm. Even if they can say and understand the words otherwise, the feeling is there. So, but you're also still not prepared. Like, death seems so far away. Your people who are just 5 or 6 years older than you are just old. You know what I mean? Like, when you're 14, people who are in their mid-20s are just old to you. Because they're like your parents, even though they could easily be a decade younger or worse in some cases. If they're old, like death happens to them.
Well, these are people who aren't in school anymore, right?
Exactly.
They go to work in the morning.
Ew.
Yeah.
Yeah. Ick. So, but then after that, it's like, okay, you start having existential crises about the fact that you're going to die at some point. I think for a lot of people, and me included, it's usually when your grandparents die, it kind of hits a bit different, or your great-grandparents die, maybe. When you have that first person in your life that you knew die, it just, all of a sudden, mortality is just of the utmost importance, and it's like a very melancholy thing. But then all of a sudden, your time becomes so much more important, because you kind of fully understand and realize you have a finite amount of it.
And these kids outside are being loud and obnoxious.
Yeah, and I can't believe that I'm going to have to spend my potentially last moments listening to these idiot children tear up my lawn. Yeah, this is so unfair. Different kind of entitlement takes over at that point. Welfare. But anyway, that aside, but before then, it's like, yeah, it doesn't matter. We got all the time in the world. I don't really have very strong opinions. Hey, you are another hairless ape like myself. I see you too enjoy the crayon, you know. Yes, I too
enjoy. I too partake of the crayon.
Yes. I find the purple to be a particularly good vintage, like, you know.
Man, what a weird thing that is. Favorite colors. Why do we have those?
I
don't know that I could say that I do have one anymore, but there was a time in which I had an answer to that question.
Okay, interesting. You've played role-playing games with customizable characters.
Yes.
Do you have a color scheme that you almost always default to? Because I feel like that's the adult version of my favorite colors.
That's funny, but I'm going to say no.
Okay.
There might be some that I have anti-favorite colors, maybe.
And why are they yellow?
I was going to say yellow and pink, right?
Mm-hmm.
But basically anything else. It's like, yeah, if there's a cool looking way to make it work, then what? Yeah, it's a color.
Yeah, you appreciate aesthetics, but you don't have like necessarily favorite one. Well, you know that I am a particular connoisseur of pink. That's one of my favorite colors for sure.
Yes. We sit in a room that is pink right now.
Yes,
quite often. The light bulbs, not because of the paint.
That's true. I don't know that I'd paint a room pink. But that's also because
that sends a completely different signal.
That really does. I'm a huge Barbenheimer fan. Why are there chalkboards and pink walls in here? It's like I was trying to blend the aesthetics. But yeah, no, favorite colors is weird. That weirdly enough, that is one of the things, though, that might prevent someone from being your friend when you are five.
Right, because it's one of the only things that you have an opinion about.
Yes.
I think green is all right. Like,
it's like, what's your favorite color? You just kind of look at him. It's like, oh, I like red. He's all right.
It's like astrology before you learn the names, really.
That's exactly it.
Ugh, he is such a red crayon.
That kid over there, true is blue, you know. Teacher's definitely a green. Like, it's funny, but I could totally see... Well, no, even the stupid paper game that I don't know if kids still play these days, where you fold the paper into the pyramid shape and you like have to like open it and close it.
The fortune telling origami thing.
Kinda. Yeah. Colors is always one of the things where they tell you to pick your favorite color.
Yes.
Even though there's only 16 possible solutions in this entire thing, but whatever. It's fine. Oh, man. But yeah, that's interesting. But yeah, beyond favorite colors, I think it's also interesting that the friends you make when you're a child the friendships you make are either way shorter or way longer than a lot of the other friendships you'll have in life. And I think it's due to the fact that when you're a child, you are still very malleable as a person. So all the things that you've yet to form an opinion about, you're still very susceptible to like peer pressure and things. Mm-hmm. And so it could be such that your friend makes whichever one of you came to an opinion first and then shares it with the other will kind of just by default accept the yet. Oh, I'll have that.
Wow, that's my original idea too.
Wow, I cannot believe we both decided to watch SpongeBob over the summer. Weird. Holy crap. Is it harder to make friends as kids now because they have YouTube instead of just cable television where you get three channels to watch and there's like five programs on each channel?
I wouldn't make that assumption because they can also share things with each other.
Yeah, they can use their phones, which we didn't have when we were five, to DM. Bro, send me that snapshot of that lit YouTube video.
Well, or even if they don't have like a way to send messages, they probably do. But even if they didn't, you know, if they're spending time together, you know,
yeah,
5-year-old grabs grandma's iPad and here, we're going to watch this together.
Bro, check out this toy demo. Oh, man. I think one thing we've talked about quite a bit, too, is that I'm not sure about. I've noticed this in the newest generation of air quote legal adults. No, that's not air quoted. Legal air quote adults, of which I have a sibling and like relatives, is how easy it is for them to like make friends online. Like, I think the cultural opinion towards internet friends has changed a lot.
Okay.
Like, I distinctly remember the truism of the internet that everyone is a 40-year-old man in his mom's basement.
Yes.
Everyone online is that except for me.
That's still true.
It is still absolutely true. So
like, they're a little older now. They're 50 now, but
it's their house now because mom passed away, but whatever. But I distinctly remember in school having to go to the computer lab and like take computer class, like typing and internet safety.
Yes.
You know, things like, never give out your address, phone number, real name. Meanwhile, yeah,
never give out anything that can be used to find you.
Right. Meanwhile, Mark Zuckerberg comes along and says, why don't you just put all of that where literally everyone who also put that information out can see it?
What a great idea.
I'm going to do that
idea.
certainly no bad or harm will ever come of this. But I wonder if it's easier, because my attitude towards online friends has not changed a ton. I do find it easy to acquaint with people I met online, but I don't think I can call someone online a friend until I've like met them. Like, even if I've done all the other things that I would normally do, like spent hours a week with this person, talking with them, having shared interests, all that stuff, you're still not a friend until I've actually physically seen you in person at least once. Like, that's something for me that's kind of like a weird...
I don't know that I would go that far. I definitely know people that I have not met in person that I would call friends. It's far from everyone that I've met online, obviously, but I would say it takes longer. I need to know someone longer and have more experiences with someone who is an online friend for me to start calling them a friend than it would take in person, probably.
Mm-hmm.
But I wouldn't draw a line and say I have to meet you in person before you're a friend.
Or at the very least, I would qualify as that you're an internet friend.
That's probably true. I think I would probably say that. Yeah.
Yeah. I think the other thing we wanted to talk about with this, now that we've kind of hashed out how easy it is for kids to make friends, why is it, I mean, you get opinions as you become an adult, but like, there's only so many opinions you can have,
mm-hmm.
right? Why does it get so much harder when you're an adult to make friends?
I think that, well, yeah, there's not very many contexts in which it's appropriate to make friends. I think we already talked about that.
There's work.
Right.
Where's the other place you see a lot of adults around your, a lot of other adults that you can just talk to? I think that's probably the problem.
Yes. This is one of those things. This goes back to what we were talking about a couple of weeks ago, was mentioned, church.
Yeah.
Church would be a good place to make friends.
Yeah. In my experience, there's the work, church, and the bar. Those are like the three primary social gathering points where people can congregate.
Yes. The bar is out of the question for me, because I have decided that, my opinions as an adult have decided that is not the people that would hang out in bars are not the people that I want to be friends with.
Yeah.
Well, and so it goes for churches also, like, I guess, technically.
Yeah. And unlike the other human relationship that everyone wants at some point, you know, companionship in the form of usually marriage,
mm-hmm.
which that's another funny one, because that's kind of like, that's the other thing that's difficult for people to kind of figure out. Like, the number of people who end up marrying somebody that was either born or lived most of their life within a 50-mile radius of each other is shockingly high,
mm-hmm.
which means that you probably formed a lot of your opinions about each other well before you were adults, and or prior to the internet, you probably shared a lot of similarities due to your geography.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's like a recurring theme of the show, is talking about just how much the internet has like broken the cultural grasp on, like, the geographical grasp on culture. It's like to the point where we even call things internet culture, like,
right? Yeah, that's becoming less of a thing. Internet culture is definitely bleeding more into regular culture, thanks to social media, right? More people using it. I still think internet culture, okay, it does bleed into the real world to the point where, like, Twitter drama ends up on the news. Like,
oh God, it is weird to see.
But also, but Twitter drama, I don't see Twitter drama on the street, right? I don't see people in public making noise about something on Twitter, right?
Yet.
So yeah, it's leaked into like television. And I mean, I guess there's protests here and there, which can be affiliated with that to some degree.
Oh, man.
But those are usually bigger issues that were probably going to result in protests anyway.
Maybe.
Probably.
Yeah. But I was like, okay, yeah, I remember where we left off. But people have taken to building tools to sort out the other kind of relations that humans have other than friendships via the internet.
And, yes.
And don't get me wrong, I know that social media, like, to the otherwise viewer, it might seem like we're just beating around the whole bush of like, but what about social media? Like, mm-hmm. Facebook's not for hooking up or finding a wife. It's not farmersonly.com. You know, you can make friends on Facebook. That's, they even call it that. That's what, you don't follow anyone on Facebook. Well, you can now, which is weird, I guess. But you call them Facebook friends.
Right. They're friends.
Yeah. So why can't you Facebook friend?
Because nobody on Facebook is a friend.
No.
Everyone hates each other.
Well, A, that. B, Facebook kind of introduced the workplace problem to friendships.
Yeah.
Because normally when you stop being friends with somebody, you kind of just stop seeing them around. And you stop right. interacting with them.
But they're still on Facebook.
But now they're still on Facebook. And what's even worse is you can graphically map your overlaps. Mm-hmm. Oh, so-and-so is also friends with, you know, my ex-friend Jim is friends with Tim. And I'm friends with Tim. Great. Well, what's Tim going to do? Like, and this was a thing that happened before Facebook. You know, if two people had a pretty serious falling out over something, there was kind of a divide the spoils kind of deal mm-hmm. where if you were, have you ever had that experience where you were caught between two people that used to be friends, but then like suddenly weren't and then didn't like each other over something big that happened and you were kind of caught in the middle? That ever happened to you?
Maybe. It's very vague to me now though.
It's like a very minor version of a divorce.
Yes.
Of which you're just a child in the family. It's weird because ideally, we're all adults. Why can't I just be friends? Because obviously, I was already, in a lot of cases, I was already friends with both of you. Or I became friends with each of you for independent reasons other than your friendship to each other. You know? So why is it that the issue you two have all of the sudden affects my ability? And I guess the one reason why is that if, for example, you were friends with a guy who, like, but I'm assuming the reason they're not friends anymore probably comes down to some kind of a moral violation on one half or the other. That's probably, like, in my mind, that's one of the biggest way friendships tend to implode. One person steals from somebody else or, you know, commits adultery with someone else's spouse, you know, pretty good reasons to end a friendship, I would say. And so the person who is wrong sees the other person as, oh, this person is just morally bad. Mm-hmm. And if you're friends with them, then you are a bad judge of character or something, mm-hmm. you know, or just I'm super duper butthurt about it. I don't know. Maybe that's why. But that kind of stuff becomes just super blatant and obvious when you can see every interaction people have, mm-hmm. you know, because I distinctly remember, especially in the latter years of school, social media hadn't quite taken off yet. I definitely wasn't super involved in it, but I had like different friend groups because I was in different groups of classes, if that makes any sense. Like I took college classes in high school and was in like smart kid classes, but I had friends who were in dumb kid classes. Like it was just X grade subject. You know, mm-hmm. as opposed to the subject name. Like I had friends that were chilling in 11th grade English while I was in world lit. You know what I mean? Because they were both not required. You just take one or the other, right? So I had friends who's like, oh, these are my smart class friends, because if you're taking one, you typically take several, you know? And then I have my friends that I didn't do the smart classes, but we were all in like an extracurricular together. Right. And if one member of each friend group didn't like the other, well, that's fine. They don't ever interact. I never interact with both of them together. Mm-hmm. And they don't see me really interacting with each other. So it's like no harm, no foul. And they may be even aware of it, but it's not like in their face. Whereas with something like Facebook, all of a sudden, if you you hate Jim,
I can cyberstalk my friends and see.
Yeah, make sure they're being good friends. Mm-hmm. Like, hey, I can't believe you like Jim's Facebook post.
Yeah, as if that matters.
But it does. Like,
but it does.
It's funny now that parents are on Facebook, because I've literally heard my mom say that. Like, it's weird hearing my mother, who is an elderly woman. Oh, I hope she doesn't listen to this.
You're in trouble.
I'm in trouble. Like, Mom, no offense, but you're technically geriatric at this point. technically speaking, that's all I'm saying. I still love you, though, Mom.
It's nothing personal.
Nothing personal. But I've heard her say, oh, I cannot believe so-and-so liked so-and-so else's Facebook post. She's a hussy. Like, you know what I mean?
Wow.
Like, and I'm like, okay, what does that matter? He's like, I'm probably just not going to talk to her anymore. It's like, well, why not? Like, what does it matter?
Someone clicked an internet button and now you're not going to talk to them anymore.
Ooh, how dare you click that internet button? Or even funnier, they did a reaction on Facebook that my mother couldn't decipher and didn't know if it was good or bad. I don't know what that means, but I don't like it. You interacted. So yeah, I think social media is horrible for trying to make and maintain friendships.
I you could have stopped that sentence a little sooner.
What? But specifically, it's both.
Yes.
Like, if you make friends IRL and then get Facebook and you all get Facebook together, I don't know. I feel like it exposes things that you normally wouldn't need to see. And in a world where, yes.
Yeah, I guess. Okay, I did have an experience like this once, recently, I mean, in which I found, okay, I'm not an active user of any social media, really, unless you count, like, Reddit.
The worst of them, but yeah, go on.
Well, yeah, but at least, okay, but Reddit, you don't have people's real names on Reddit.
No, that's the anti-social media.
Exactly, it's the anti-social media, yes. I'm going to skip that joke. Okay.
Good. You should.
Anyway, so I found someone's social media page because it was linked elsewhere. And I'm like, okay, let's read this for a bit. And I got a peek behind the curtain. I'm like, ah, this is what your opinion on important social issue is or whatever.
Oh.
Oh, you're this kind of person. I have my suspicions, but now I know. And it's like, yeah, I've just like soured my opinion to this person for nothing.
I think it's very important that you not know your friend's Reddit handles. I'm just throwing that out there. It's perfectly good to not know those things. That would, can you imagine if Reddit had like friends where you could just make friends with people on Reddit? Does it have that feature? I'm just not aware of it.
You can follow individual profiles now.
Yeah, but that's different.
It is.
But imagine you were like, oh, cool. This is so-and-so connected profiles. And like everyone
right,
can
and
see.
And now like my front page will also show things that you updated or whatever.
Or I get recommendations for subreddits that you're in. It's like, what the fuck was that? There's so many subreddits I'm thinking of right now where it's like, man, like.
I feel like I'm being judged unfairly right now.
Oh, but yeah, it's an enlightening subject that. I don't know. I feel like one of the key things, I guess we should cut to the chase. We've been talking about this for like 40 minutes, I guess. Mm-hmm. But like, I think one of the most interesting things that defines a friendship is the boundaries that are around friendship.
Okay.
Friendship has a lower bounds, which is obvious. We all know that it's like, yeah, this is a person that I can stand to be around, but I wouldn't really ever call him my friend.
Mm-hmm.
And insert your laundry list of preferences and red flags and, you know, the social math that's required to calculate whether or not someone can be a friend or not, whatever, which also is constantly changing mm-hmm. as they are and you are, you know. As an adult, that makes having friends difficult because you're constantly doing that calculus, subconsciously kind of. But there's also like an upper bounds on friendship, I think, where an upper boundary on what you can know about somebody. Because there's a finite number of things you can know about a person.
Yeah.
There are things that people aren't even aware of about themselves
mm-hmm.
And that's one of the useful things about having friends is your friends will,
they will point out your flaws that are invisible to you.
Or visible to you, but your thinking aren't that visible to other people.
Right.
Like punctuality.
Yeah, by the way, we know. Oh, yeah.
That's a good one. Well. Yeah. Yeah. It's like, hey, maybe you shouldn't make that plan because you definitely won't
be
there.
You can't live up to it. Yeah.
Yeah, I've known you long enough to know. It's like, oh, okay, you're right. Like, but that's what a good friend is for.
Yeah.
But also what a bad friend does. Like, that's the weird thing about
it. Yes.
There's this weird boundary where it's like, okay,
all you're doing is kicking me about my shortcomings. Yeah.
Yeah.
Are you really my friend? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And there's also things that, like, when you know about somebody, you can't unknow. And if it's one of your preferences or red flags, it can be just absolutely disheartening to because it doesn't erase the effort that was spent. And this is where the whole I've only got so much finite time left comes into the equation of sunk cost fallacy in friendships where.
Well, and I think there's also. It's easy to how did you find out about the thing that you wish you hadn't found out about, right?
Yeah.
And like, okay, or why is something a red flag, right? Like, is it a red flag because you think they're actually going to like betray you in an important way in the future because of that, or do you just like think that they have like some kind of gross habit or something like that you don't like thinking about, or is it, you know, I don't know anything like that. But like up until this point, until you found out through some unusual way that they are like this, it's like, but it wasn't impacting your friendship at all. So why do you care? Actually, right. You had a good friendship going. Why is it sour now? Unless you have a real reason to think that it's going to hurt you if you continue it.
Yeah. Well, and I think the reason that comes about with that is friendships are also networks. So, it depends. So good example perhaps is, say you're friends with somebody, you're friends with them for years, but then you discover all of a sudden that they have a substance abuse problem. Now they've had this substance abuse problem the entire time you've known them, but they're very high functioning users, right? That might be something that's enough for you to go, stinky, I don't like that. I don't want to be associated. Like I don't like that habit. And if you know about it, man, there are so many sitcom episodes that are this situation where someone finds out something about someone else and they have to make the choice of, do they acknowledge it and like make others aware that they are aware of it, or do they keep it to themselves, not even letting the person who has the problem know
that they know. Yeah.
And that's still a burden though.
Mm-hmm.
It's a burden to shoulder someone else's shortcomings like that and then not tell anybody. And it's a different weight burden for different people. Some people, you know, like I have a memory problem. I have a hard time remembering things a lot. And I used to be really upset about it. But honestly, I'm at the point now where it's one of the greatest gifts I've ever been given. Because if someone does something I didn't like, it's like, well, if I just don't think about it for a week, I'll probably forget.
Get purged from the cash and
cash will get cleared, you know, and I'll be fine. Or I can just busy myself with something else until it goes away. And then it's like, cool, I don't remember. Not a problem. But if there's a group of people and one of them has this problem and you're now aware of it, all of a sudden your every interaction could potentially be cast in the light of this new information. Not because the interaction, you know, because now it's like, I know. So for example, buddy says, hey man, can I borrow $20? No problem. But you find out your friend's a user.
Now you're thinking, what's that $20 for?
Exactly.
Right. And am I an enabler now?
Yeah. Add on top of that, you have a mutual friend who you tell the first friend is a user, and first friend asks you for $20 in front of other friend. So now it's not just, am I an enabler? Is friend B gonna think I'm an enabler?
Right. Yeah. Am I about to show myself as an enabler? Yeah.
Right. And it just, you know, it can get complicated quickly. And these are things that are not easy to resolve, especially because on the one hand, depending on how good of a friend you are, like there's this weird place where it's like you can be not good enough friends where you shouldn't care and either do or don't give them the $20 because on principle. But there's another barrier beyond that of like, well, I am a good enough friend that it would be weird if I rejected him the $20, but I'm not good enough to, it's not my place to tell him what his business is, even though I think it's wrong. And we're good enough friends that I don't want to jeopardize the friendship by letting him know that I know. But then there's another level above that where it's like, I am good enough friends with this guy to just confront him about it and it not
tell him that he needs help. Yeah.
And it not threaten the friendship, even though now the friendship is more valuable than it was when I was in the zone where I couldn't. And also, I have to now think about all of this. And guess what? Nobody wants a friendship where they're constantly having to like jump through social loops and figure out it should be easy.
Mm-hmm.
Because we've always had easy friendships. Like we all remember how easy it was to make that first friend when we were five. Mm-hmm. And I think that there's something it takes a long time to get to the point where you stop just taking friendships as something for granted and like you can just have them. You know, and they can just get made and broken and it's not a big deal. So I don't know. People also move. That's like another really common thing that happens.
Yeah.
Reason friendships end. Geography is also still the enemy of friendships, you know, like,
mm-hmm. Yeah, it turns out being close to each other physically is an important part of it.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
And doing things together, like friendships must be maintained. Like that's a classification of friend we haven't talked about. The old friend.
Yes.
Not ex-friend. That's very different.
Right. The person that if you got back together, you would still be friends. At least at first.
Or, yeah, for an evening or whatever. Like,
right.
Good example. I have a story to tell. I think I told you the story or a version of the story a while back. But, like, there was a guy that I was friends with in school that when I went to college, he went to a different college and we stopped hanging out and we fell out of friendship. But we were really good friends for a long time. And I happened to like run into him at a bar one summer when I was home, back when I was in college. And we ended up hanging out that entire evening. And it was a great time. And then he had to go do something the next morning. And then I've never seen him again. But it's like, that's some old friend level stuff where it's like, if I saw him today, I would immediately want to talk to him and hang out with him. But there's a good chance that we've diverged so much that if we spent any more time, I wouldn't look forward to the next time of seeing that person.
Right, your lifestyles are incompatible now, yeah.
Exactly. But also, you kind of revert a little bit. Like,
yes, it is easy to code switch back to the way you were together. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's a weird thing that happens. Like, high school reunions, I feel like, are an interesting petri dish of this behavior. Now, I am not and do not intend to attend any of those types of reunions because I think they're dumb.
Yes.
But what I wouldn't give to be a fly on the wall and like witness people I know that I went to high school with today I would love to witness them in their day-to-day life now, but then attend the reunion and see just how different they become. Because now all of a sudden you're surrounded by all these people that you once were immature with and see how they behave because there's this tendency to like revert. I've even heard people entirely switch. Wow, 2000 slang comes out different when you're around people that you were friends with then. No. Yeah, it's different. It's very interesting. It's like watching a movie that came out. And I think this is something that's funny like today, like because of just how sensitive people are about certain subjects.
Mm-hmm.
It's funny to me watching movies that came out not that long ago. And people say the phrase, you know, oh, that wouldn't get made today. Well, the same thing happens when people get back together who haven't hung out in a long time. It's like, oh, we wouldn't talk like that to people we meet today, no matter how good of friends we became with them, you know? And that's an interesting thing. But friendships are good. They're very valuable. I find the older I get, the more precious my friendships become and the harder I want to preserve good ones. The easier it is, I think, to tell when it would not be worth the time. I had a moment less than a year ago. It was last year. Where
it's January, by the way.
Yeah. For those of you who didn't bother reading the date this was probably posted. Yeah. It's January. But I just think I remembered like looking through like old messages and seeing like how many people have I, when I stopped hanging out with them, we stopped hanging out, right?
Mm.
And that's a weird thing. I think there are certain cancerous thoughts that can get put in your ear about things that can ruin friendships, potentially. Like, when anytime someone points out relationship dynamics and friend groups, it is usually never a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's another, a lot of sitcom episodes about that, where new person joins the regular, like, random NPC joins the main party and points out, like, oh, yeah, you're this archetype. You're the this archetype. You're the this archetype. And then all of a sudden, everyone starts fighting about, no, I'm not, or no, yeah, they're not, you know?
I'm Dirty Dan.
I mean, no, I'm Dirty Dan. You know, like, oh, let's do which one of us is X character from the Breakfast Club, you know, like,
yeah,
and why is everyone Emilio, you know what I mean? Like, because we all want to be the coolest character,
right?
Or insert childhood show here, like, oh, let's, you know, sometimes it works out because we have our preferences will also align us with characters, but oftentimes there's the main character and there's everyone else, and everyone mm-hmm. thinks they're the main character.
Yeah,
by and large.
It's because I am.
Well, I enjoy being a supporting actor, a supporting cast member in the life of David. Coming soon to Blu-ray.
You're welcome.
Coming soon to DVD. And Betamax. But, I don't know. I don't know what else you can say about friends or friendships. Like, it's just a thing that happens, and I think it really sucks when you don't have them, or it's hard to get.
Yeah.
Especially if you're not a churchgoer, beer drinker.
It's one of those things, it's just like, you know, if you're looking for a relationship, right? Like, the harder you look, the harder it becomes to get one. Like,
that is so true.
It's one of those things that just has to happen organically if it's ever going to be worth anything.
Yeah,
but that's frustrating.
Well, and I often tell people who are in that situation, like, especially when it comes to friendships, maybe not so much relationships, although maybe the advice is still applicable, but I know that it is for friendships. There's nothing wrong with having transient friends. And by that, I don't mean that they're transients, because that's a funny thing to call somebody. But yes. Like, what I mean is, I'm friends with this person because they are good enough. Like, lower your barrier to entry a little bit. Keep your distance, right? I think that's another thing that's weird, is the binary of friend or not is kind of awkward. So,
right. We can be friends in certain contexts, but I'm not, like, you know, inviting you over to my house or something like that.
Yeah. You can't come to my house, but you can swim in my pool. Like, you ever heard that saying?
No.
Oh, it's from The Office. My nephew's a screw up.
Oh, I see.
He can swim in my pool, but he can't come in my house. But those transient friends are great for finding other friends.
Yeah.
Like, because it's a web. Like, if you're in the middle of, you know, if you have no nodes to get on, the most important thing is to get on a node to start. And then at that point, start climbing around on the tree. You'll find someone eventually. It's a lot easier to do that than it is to, like, try to step back and see the web from a distance and figure out where a good friend would be. Now, that being said, you know, there's that route. There's the interest route. People still have hobbies. I know a lot of friends that are into, like, tabletop gaming that make friends at the game store because, well,
common interest.
If you have a common interest, guess what? That's an easy step. That's why church and the bar work.
Right. We have a common interest.
Yep.
Yeah. Either reading this book or getting drunk.
Exactly. And I think that, at least I noticed that when I was in, like, college, for example, the bar was a great place to meet friends that, when you fall out of the phase of that habit, and maybe that's one of the, like, that's kind of like the last phase you go through, I think. One of the last phases you kind of go through as in your adulthood is, and not everyone goes through it. It's like one of the last side quests you can take is the college side quest. And if you do that, then the bar, you know, mini adventure is available, or mini game is available to you.
I was going to say, yeah, this is a recurring thing. It's not a,
it's not a quest. It's like a fetch quest, you know.
It's a daily.
Daily challenges. Yes, going to the bar. But when you get out of college, you may not end up continuing to do that later on. Like, I know fewer non-college age people that go to the bar regularly, even weekly, or even ever at this point. But you make friends because you're both in that place, that the friendship survives when you're both no longer in that place, you know. But that's generally, I guess, my advice, you know, is common interest or just get on a node somewhere and don't set your bar too high, because it especially if you go into a friendship, and you should never go into a friendship expecting a lot. I think that's another big problem people have, is they're like, I'm looking for a best friend for life. It's like,
don't,
that's not going to work.
Maybe you'll find one, but yeah.
The amount of value you get from just having a friend.
Well, again, back to romantic relationships. It's like, I want the perfect woman, right? Well, guess what? There isn't one.
Well, and the definition, subject to change, and you're the author of that definition.
Right.
So, you know, like most people think, I don't understand how my parents could ever have been together, for example, mm-hmm. or whatever, stuff like that. Or, but like, there was a time when that was totally okay, or they were all over, and then you grow into that, you know. Similar thing with friendships. There are people you wouldn't become friends with maybe today, but you've built enough of a strong enough bond and relationship that, oh, but it works,
mm-hmm.
because you've invested enough to make it work, you know. I don't know. It's a tough one, though. You know, I don't know that going on the internet and finding relationship or friend advice is the best idea.
Oh, goodness. No. Do not ask. Dear God, don't ask Reddit for help.
Well, let me tell you how to dominate any Reddit social subject.
Yeah. Let me go ask the loneliest people on earth how to make friends. Like,
well, according to my research, you have to be able to dominate social circumstances.
Oh, my goodness.
Here's 5 tips for becoming an alpha in your social circles. Because that kind of mindset is like the reason these people are the loneliest people on the planet, because they see every social dynamic.
They're trying too hard. Yep. Yeah.
Everything has a Machiavellian twist.
Like, right.
Oh, man. Because that hour vanished.
It did.
Well, until next week, dear listeners, because I don't have anything else to say unless you do.
I don't think I do.
Philosophers.
Philosophers. If you like the music in this episode, please check out Jippy on Bandcamp at jippy.bandcamp.com.
Philosophers is supported by viewers like you.
If there's a topic you'd like us to discuss,
or a topic you'd like to see revisited in the future,
please let us know by contacting us using the methods in the description,
or in the comments below. Thank you for listening.